Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Clifton Roberts. Thanks for being with us on the show.
It is my pleasure. Very excited to be with you guys.
Clifton, can you start out by telling our listeners how you got interested in a plant-based diet?
Yes, absolutely. The story's pretty unique, and I know most adults don't remember things that happened when they're five, but this is a memory that I equate it to a dream that I had last night. You know how you can see the visions of your dream, and so the visions are very vivid. But when I was five, my mother is Korean, my father is black, and my mother used to fix this really popular dish called bulgogi, which is Korean beef. And of course, you know, as a five-year-old, I had watched her, you know, make kimchi, which is out of cabbage, and, you know, soybean sprouts, which is called kognamul. And one day, I think I got curious, and I asked her what this bulgogi was made out of, and she told me cow. Now, mind you, I had met cows, but, you know, by the time I was five, and so I just remember being heartbroken. And so, you know, I had those parents that would tell me, don't leave until you can't leave the kitchen table until you finish eating. Mm. And so when they weren't looking, you know, I would chew in front of them, and the taste of it was actually delicious. So I'd chew the flavor out of it, and when they would leave, I'd take the flesh that I had chewed on and throw it into the corner behind this curio cabinet. Yeah, and I did that. And in my five-year-old brain, I thought, what a perfect hiding place. They had not found it. And eventually my mother smelled, you know, the rotting flesh and found it. But, you know, through the years, because of my consumption of meat and dairy, the two people that loved me most in the world, my parents, could not figure out why I was always sick. I was diagnosed with asthma, and they take me to these other human beings who happen to read a lot more books than them called doctors. And these doctors couldn't even figure out what was wrong with me. So they would poke and prod me and basically tell me that I was allergic to nature. And then they said, your son has asthma and bronchitis and this and that. And I remember even one time being taken in an ambulance when I was about seven, and, you know, they had to put the breathing thing on me. And so for years, I thought that I was allergic to everything under the sun, you know, cats, dogs, grass, trees, pollen, bees, all that, right? When I went to high school and I played football, unfortunately, even though I was a standout athlete, it was very difficult for me to fall in the grass, according to what I was thinking. So fast forward to age 30, I read a book by Mary Lou Henner, and she says one of the most logical things I think I had ever encountered. And it was in her book, Total Body Makeover. And she said, you know, by genetic design, the milk of a cow is designed to turn its 40-pound calf into a 2,000-pound beast in less than 2 years. Uh-huh. And that cow has four compartments in its stomachs so that it is better able to digest nature's most powerful substance. And it just hit me like a rock. And so at the age of 30, on my birthday, my wife and I said, let's do it. Let's give it a try. And you guys, for the first time in my life, after 2 weeks, I was able to throw away my inhaler. I was able to throw away my nose spray. My friends used to tease me because I used to carry around Afrin everywhere, you know?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I was able to breathe. My acne disappeared. And since that time, I don't get sick. You know, my acronym for cold is condition, obviously linked to dairy. And so you see, my vegan journey was initially very selfish because it was for me. But then as I went along, And I tried to convince other people in my family, which I thought would be easy, but it's not. But that's when I started to learn about the impact to animals and the cruelty. And so over the years, I evolved my selfish position to one of, you know, compassion and thinking about, you know, the lives of other people, as I call animals.
Yeah.
And you definitely took that to the next level in terms of on a different platform, and that was by being involved with the Humane Party. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about, you know, with the party itself and what your goals are and what you hope to accomplish.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a great question. So going along as a vegan, trying to be an individual activist, talking to people as I come across, you know, I'd come to the realization that Democrats or Republicans just really didn't care about the environment. They really didn't care about animals and how we treat them. And that culture, habit, and tradition had instilled a sense of just like we deserve as human beings to be able to do what we want to nature and representatives of nature, which are animals. And so I was fed up with that treatment, how we treated each other, police brutality, you know, in my community, and always being at war. It seems like every time I turned on the news, we were at war. And at, you know, I had children, so I really started to think about tomorrow and my children's children and my great grandchildren and things like that. I said, you know, I want to get involved in politics, and not just by voting for the lesser of two evils. So I went online, and I was very skeptical. I said to myself, you know, I'd love it if I can find a political party, and I'm picture me Googling. Political party cares about animals, cares about environment, you know, things like that. And lo and behold, the Humane Party popped up. And this was in, I want to say, 2014 is when I did that search. And, you know, something popped up. And then I saw that they said that they were looking for a CEO. And at the time, you know, I still work at Intel. That's my day job. So I said, you know, let me give it a try. Given my background, I thought that I might be able to contribute. And if not, I would still volunteer. But you know, so I submitted a volunteer application, and I said I was interested in being this CEO, this rotating CEO. And I would say about 4 months later, somebody contacted me. And so
that was a little bit of a lag time there, 4 months.
Yeah, well, at the time, there weren't too many volunteers to be able to field the number of people interested, you know? Uh-huh. And so I came aboard, and the first thing I did as the CEO, of course, after interviewing with the board of directors who were all vegan, and you got to think, as I'm interviewing with the board, I just was amazed, and I was so thankful. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is an actual political party. You guys are all vegan. How amazing.
How and come so we the, never heard of it before?
That's right.
I know. I felt like it was heaven sent. And especially after reading the platform and the goals and the mission statement and the vision, it aligned completely. You know, maybe there might have been one or two things that I had not thought about in detail. Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, requiring a balance in federal budget, replacing the Electoral College, equality, you know, universal health care, and ending non-emergency based use of toxic and hazardous fuels, and defending our environment, our air, land, and water resources, eliminating the systems and practices that create profit motives to go to war, granting animal personhood, or, you know, non-human animals. And, you know, I mean, just across the board, a very solid platform.
And very challenging, too.
Yeah.
It is. But I want to remind people that from the time of conception with the Republican Party to when Abraham Lincoln actually won the presidency of the United States, it had been about 100 or so years. So I think being involved, you know, with the seeding of this political party and, you know, watering it and just making sure that we have candidates and volunteers, I think overall we'll get there. I have no doubt in my mind. Hmm.
Right. Well, it seems like one of the most important things, and I might be wrong, but is just even by having a party, you're creating space for a conversation. You know, you're forcing candidates in some ways to consider those issues or think about them or address them in a particular way. And even if, you know, the party may not win every election, it does change the conversation and gets people thinking about different things.
I agree 100%. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I learned after I ran in 2016, which, by the way, quick story there, you know, now that I'm a volunteer, one of the first things I did was eliminate pay for the CEO, because I felt like, you know, I have a job, so I don't need the pay. But if I'm going to ask people to volunteer, I probably should lead by example. So, you know, no more pay for the CEO, please. But then, you know, after about 3 months, I set up a conference infrastructure. I reached out to animal rights lawyers and advocates across the country. And I said, hey, can you run this particular conference, which includes these states? Can you make a chapter here or there? You know, that type of thing. And then I want to say it was August of 2015. The board approached me and said, look, we need some candidates. You know, people are asking us now. And although I had promised to get them some candidates, which was more difficult than I had anticipated, they said, "Hey, what do you think about running? We nominate you to run."
And you're like, "Oh,
yeah, that's a big pill to swallow," I would think.
It was. And you know, the first thing I did was I called my mother, and I still call her Mommy. And I said, "Mommy, guess what? You know, the political party I'm volunteering for, they asked me to run for president. What do you think about that?" You know, and in her Korean accent, she said, "Do it."
Well, by not considering the animals, we're in a bit of a pickle about climate change.
Yeah.
That's a way to put it.
That's an understatement, right?
Yeah.
So what could we do, what should or could we do to reduce our amount of meat we eat and try to deal with climate change by dietary habits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The United Nations Environment Unit, they actually have a program dedicated to tackling the world's most urgent problem. They published a report back in 2018, and this was the title. It's Tackling the World's Most Urgent Problem, Meat.
Yeah.
I thought that was fascinating that the United Nations would actually publish that. And to your point, I think what you are doing at your radio station and what vegans are doing is that very first layer, individual activism, I think is the grassroots portion of that. By the way, my acronym for MEAT, I'm into acronyms. My acronym for MEAT is muscle and epinephrine of animal tissue. Epinephrine is a form of adrenaline, and as you know, animals get scared just like any other mammal, and it's something that we can't take out. Okay, but anyway, I know I'm off topic. But the United Nations actually put this out, and I think bringing continued awareness to the destructive impact of animal agriculture on our environment and reminding people that destructive impact far exceeds that of any other technology on Earth is important. And I think you saw the Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. Beyond Meat recently came out with their initial public offering.
Uh-huh. Right.
And you know, that's a company now that is challenging culture, tradition, and habit. And I think you know, the fact that they exist, companies like that and Impossible Foods.
Yeah.
It's pretty
incredible.
Amazing. And it's pretty amazing, too, the value that they assessed for Beyond Meat. The company value that they put out was something like $1.6 billion or something. I was like, wow. That's...
I wish I'd invested.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it was difficult. I actually looked at trying to get in, you know, at least get allocated some shares. I was trying to get 100. But it was so popular that, you know, brokerage houses like TD Ameritrade or E-Trade, it was difficult to even get 100. And I think the price on the IPO was, what, 25 or 30?
Yeah, it started at 25.
Yeah.
$25.
Yeah,
so. That's not too bad.
Yeah. And I think the first day, it shot up to almost 60.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show you, though, that the mindset of the American people is changing, and like people do want this option. And once they learn more, you know, I think, and they share what they've learned with others, I mean, we may be at a tipping point. I don't know. I always hope that, but it seems like we're getting closer to one.
I could be. You know, I've heard a lot of companies that make vegan products saying that they're going to be able soon to compete with actual meat and dairy and bring their price of alternatives down below what meat and dairy go for. And that would certainly rush us towards a tipping point.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, speaking of tipping point, that was one of the beautiful things about reading that in UN environmental report, is that the people that made up that committee actually are very confident that within the next 10 years, we will reach that tipping point. And they understand that the global community, and it's going to take the global community, but it would be great if the U.S. can lead that charge.
Yeah.
Now, right now, with our current administration in their belief about, you know, the hoax of environmental destruction. And I think the U.S. is not going to be leading that charge right now until we get somebody else in office.
Yeah.
But, and I'm going to quote them. They said the global community can eliminate the need for animals in the food system by shifting the protein at the center of the plate to plant-based meat. And so I thought that that was awesome. But yeah, so that's what I think about, you know, and then you have other things, you know, that we need to address too, you know, whether it's the deforestation of, you know, our most crucial forests, you know, whether it's the Amazon or forests within the United States or around the world that we're chopping down for animal agriculture as well. So,
right.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely. In Texas, it's really bad.
Well,
so.
I think that speaks, you know, going back to your point on platform, is that, you know, if a party isn't even talking about animals and what they're going to accomplish and what they want to do, they're actually not really thinking about what's in the best interest entirely for humans, right? Because we have to make sure that we're considering, you know, animals are treated, factory farming, these dead zones in the oceans. Even from a selfish perspective, even if people don't care about, you know, the animals that are being, you know, killed in slaughterhouses and, you know, all sorts of other means, you know, at the end of the day, it's what's best for humans and our survival on this planet. And if the parties aren't addressing it, then we're already in an uphill battle.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the Humane Party actually has this team called the Economic Transition Team. It rotates, but there's one central guy named Jimmy Vidal, and he kind of leads these collaborative discussions, and he brings in really creative minds. And there was one report that this transition team came up with that was regarding manure. And so the conclusion that the Humane Party Economic Transition Team came to was that the number of animals being farmed generates an excessive amount of manure that exceeds the fertilization needs of crop and grazing land by alarming rates. So even if you look at that, you know, just the impact manufacturing, and you know what I mean by manufacturing, we're nearly manufacturing these lovely creatures now so that we can just turn around and kill them and eat them. But in that report, what they found was that every single state in the United States exceeded the recommended amount of manure that could be safely applied to their farmlands with the manure locally generated. And with Alaska being the state that least exceeds this amount,
right.
But
that
still
makes sense.
It generates 10 times more in a year than could be safely applied to its crop and grazing land. So it's just amazing.
I've seen some amazing solutions to our manure problem too, like, of course, converting it into fuel for our cars. And another company was using manure to make a plywood alternative. Mm. So yes. One day I'll be driving my car powered by manure to my house built out of manure.
Will that be vegan?
Yeah, and I think that is going to be – Greg, that's amazing that you're saying that, because that is going to be the key to – you know, from a policy perspective here in the United States, that's going to be the key to how we address these problems. There must be a synergistic effort between public policy and enterprise and private enterprise.
So how can people connect with the Humane Party, or what kind of connections can be made? Like, what kind of opportunities exist for people?
Great question. So you would go to humaneparty.org and you fill out a volunteer application because, yeah, they're taking anybody. and you know, I have to admit, there are times when it seems a lot more organized and there are times when it's not, you know, because when you have a young political party that's still just turned 10 years old this past Earth Day, but you know, one of the things that the political party does is they have a rotating CEO structure. Anyway, to answer your question, that's how you engage with the party, is you submit the volunteer application. And to the best of the party's ability, they leverage your strengths and your passion. So, you know, if you're interested in writing, well, then you probably want to come to the Economic Transition Team meetings or the policy meetings to look at our existing policies and our existing platforms, proposed legislation like the Abolition Amendment, and see how we can make that better, you know, make the platform better. Or you might, if you're a graphic artist, you might think graphics for the website or for social media.
Yeah, apply your skills. Like apply your skills in a way that can make the earth a better place.
Yeah. Yeah. And that way you don't get bored and, you know, eventually leave and get mad. You know, and that happens. I've seen it happen here. But yeah. I can tell you, for me, you know, no matter what I go through, this is going to be my party for the rest of my life.
We've been talking with Clifton Roberts, who was the Humane Party's 2016 candidate for the office of President of the United States. Thanks for being with us on the show, Clifton.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, Clifton, and we look forward to seeing you here in El Paso soon.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there on the 18th, right, Greg?
Yeah, that's the day.
Awesome.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.